white girl. She absolutely refused to say who your father was. Nobody knew whether she was trying to protect an underage boyfriend or something worse. We were told all of this in case you had any mental or physical difficulties. In case, she said clearly, like a teacher trying to emphasize a point sure to come up in a test, you had been the result of incest. He cowered away from her. He would have preferred to be shot. I was desperate to adopt you, she said. Desperate. But Dad was very ill. He said to me, I can't do it. I'm scared I'll hurt a baby. I need to get better before we do this, and I can't do that and cope with a new baby as well. But I was so determined to have you, said Tessa, that I pressured him into lying and telling the social workers that he was fine and pretending to be happy and normal. We brought you home, and you were tiny and premature, and on the fifth night we had you, Dad slipped out of bed and went to the garage, put a hose pipe on the exhaust of the car, and tried to kill himself, because he was convinced he'd smothered you, and he almost died. So you can blame me, said Tessa, for your and Dad's bad start, and maybe you can blame me for everything that's come since, but I'll tell you this, Stuart. Your father's spent his life facing up to things he never did. I don't expect you to understand this kind of courage, but, her voice broke at last, and he heard the mother he knew, he loves you, Stuart. She added the lie because she could not help herself. Tonight, for the first time, Tessa was convinced that it was a lie, and also that everything she had done in her life, telling herself that it was for the best, had been no more than blind selfishness, generating confusion and mess all around. But who could bear to know which stars were already dead, she thought, blinking up at the night sky. Could anybody stand to know that they all were? She turned the key in the ignition, crashed the gears, and they pulled out again onto the bypass. I don't want to go to the fields, said Fats in terror. We're not going to the fields, she said. I'm taking you home. 4. The police had picked up Crystal Whedon at last as she ran hopelessly along the riverbank on the very edge of Pagford, still calling her brother in a cracked voice. The policewoman who approached her addressed her by name and tried to break the news to her gently. But she still tried to beat the woman away from her, and in the end the policewoman had almost to wrestle her into the car. Crystal had not noticed Fats melting away into the trees. He did not exist to her anymore. The police drove Crystal home, but when they knocked on the front door, Terry refused to answer. She had glimpsed them through an upstairs window and thought that Crystal had done the one unthinkable and unforgivable thing and told the pigs about the holdalls full of Obbo's hash. She dragged the heavy bags upstairs while the police hammered at the door and only opened up when she considered that it had become unavoidable. "What you want?" she shouted through an inch-wide gap in the door. The policewoman asked to come in 3 times, and Terry refused, still demanding to know what they wanted. A few neighbours had begun to peer through windows. Even when the policewoman said, "It's about your son, Robbie," Terry did not realise.
"He's fine. There's nothing wrong with him. Crystal's got him."
But then she saw Crystal, who had refused to stay in the car and had walked halfway up the garden path. Terry's gaze trickled down her daughter's body to the place where Robbie should have been clinging to her, frightened by the strange men. Terry flew from her house like a fury, with her hands outstretched like claws, and the policewoman had to catch her around the middle and swing her away from Crystal, whose face she was trying to lacerate.
You little bitch! You little bitch! What have you done to Robbie?
Crystal dodged the struggling pair, darted into the house, and slammed the door behind her. Fuck's sake, muttered the policeman under his breath. Miles away, in Hope Street, Kay and Gaia Borden faced each other in the dark hallway. Neither of them was tall enough to replace the light bulb that had been dead for days, and they had no ladder. All day long, they had argued and almost made up, then argued again. Finally, at the moment when reconciliation seemed within touching distance, when Kay had agreed that she too hated Pagford, that it had all been a mistake, and that she would try and get them both back to London, her mobile had rung. Crystal Whedon's brother's drowned, whispered Kay, as she cut Tessa's call. Oh, said Gaia, knowing that she ought to express pity, but frightened to let discussion of London drop before she had her mother's firm commitment, she added, in a tight little voice, That's sad. It happened here in Pagford, said Kay, along the road. Crystal was with Tessa Wall's son. Gaia felt even more ashamed of letting Fats Wall kiss her. He had tasted horrible, of lager and cigarettes, and he had tried to feel her up. She was worth much more than Fats Wall, she knew that. If it had even been Andy Price, she would have felt better about it. Sukhvinder had not returned one of her calls, all day long. She'll be absolutely broken up, said Kay, her eyes unfocused. But there's nothing you can do, said Gaia, is there? Well, said Kay.
Not again, cried Gaia. It's always, always the same. You're not her social worker anymore. What,
she shouted, stamping her foot as she had done when she was a little girl,
about me?
The police officer in Foley Road had already called a duty social worker. Terry was writhing and screaming and trying to beat at the front door, while from behind it came the sounds of furniture being dragged to form a barricade. Neighbours were coming out onto their doorsteps, a fascinated audience to Terry's meltdown. Somehow the cause of it was transmitted through the watchers, from Terry's incoherent shouts and the attitudes of the ominous police. The boy's dead, they told each other. Nobody stepped forward to comfort or calm. Terry Whedon had no friends.
Come with me, Kay begged her mutinous daughter. I'll go to the house and see if I can do anything. I got on with Crystal. She's got nobody.
I bet she was shagging Fats Wall when it happened, shouted Gaia.
But it was her final protest. And a few minutes later, she was buckling herself into Kay's old Vauxhall, glad, in spite of everything, that Kay had asked her along. But by the time they had reached the bypass, Crystal had found what she was looking for. A bag of heroin concealed in the airing cupboard, the second of two that Obbo had given Terry in payment for Tessa Wall's watch. She took it, with Terry's works, into the bathroom, the only room that had a lock on the door. Her Aunt Cheryl must have heard what had happened because Crystal could hear her distinctive, raucous yell, added to Terry's screams, even through the two doors.
You little bitch! Open the door! Let your mother see ya!
And the police shouting, trying to shut the two women up. Crystal had never shot up before, but she had watched it happen many times. She knew about longboats, and how to make a model volcano, and she knew how to heat the spoon, and about the tiny little ball of cotton wool you used to soak up the dissolved smack and act as a filter when you were filling the syringe. She knew that the crook of the arm was the best place to find a vein, and she knew to lay the needle as flat as possible against the skin. She knew, because she had heard it said many times, that first-timers could not take what addicts could manage. And that was good, because she did not want to take it. Robbie was dead, and it was her fault. In trying to save him, she had killed him. Flickering images filled her mind as her fingers worked to achieve what must be done. Mr. Fairbrother, running alongside the canal bank in his tracksuit as the crew rowed. Nana Kath's face, fierce with pain and love. Robbie, waiting for her at the